If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Late Night We Stand podcast. I'm Andy Mitten. This podcast is brought to you in association with Betfred. Fred Doan opened his first shop in Salford in 1967. There's 88 minutes gone here in San Sebastian, and Manchester United are leading Real Sociedad by 1-0. As you can hear, it's pretty lively. Diogo Dalot has just been booked and he's fuming, as are the crowd. So United are winning. Garnacho scored the goal after 17 minutes. Lovely finish, lovely setup by Cristiano Ronaldo. But if the score stays like this, Real Sociedad will win the group because of a superior goal difference. That will mean Manchester United play two extra games, at least, in February, against teams who've been come out of the Champions League group. So that could potentially mean Manchester United against Barcelona, for example. It's a really lively finish to this game. So United have gone to a free at the back as they push in for a second goal. Real Sociedad a time wasting. Substitutes taking time to walk off the pitch. Even now they're taking time to make a free kick. Just wasted a minute, basically. Cristiano probably should have scored a second in the first half, but Real Sociedad have had much more pressure and possession in the second half. Might as well keep talking here, hadn't I? David De Gea's played well. He made a very good double save just before half-time. And he's been dealing with lots of high balls sent in towards him in the second half. United are really trying to throw everybody forward. Just trying to see where Harry Maguire is. Harry Maguire's like playing as a number nine. Go on, Harry. So United are going for it, and I think they've got to, even though there's a risk that Real Sociedad will score here. Might as well stay on here, aren't I? 89 minutes and 15 seconds. Bregi puts the ball in, headed away by Robin Lenormand. I spoke to Robin 2 days ago, 25-year-old French guy, nice lad. Ball comes over to Luke Shaw, jumps to try and be a commentator. No, gets a ball in towards.
Put it up!
The people around me are going mental. Oh my gosh. If only I could convey what I'm watching into words, but Marcus Rashford, albeit with a crowded box in front of him, just hit a shot well wide. But before that, it looked like United might get. So Shaw hit a ball in towards the box, which was headed on. Goalkeeper fumbled at it, and the TV cameras are going into the United end where there's just pictures of lads with their hands on the heads We're now at 90 minutes, but it's just come up for 5 minutes. The crowd have got louder in the second half. A defeat that seems like a victory. Unless Manchester United get a second. Bruno swings a long ball forward, chased down by Marcus Rashford. Centre forward, Harry Maguire shouting for it. Ah, it's gone the other way. Been pretty rainy. I only arrived really late here. Listen to this now. I've got a couple of injuries, but not in defence. The defence is really strong. Lovely footing there. Who was that? That was McTominay.
So
we've now got McTominay and Maguire up front. So it's going to be the long balls. So one of them goes in now from below. But Real Sociedad are defending well. 2,000 United fans in the corner behind the usual red, white and black tricolours. The stadium didn't used to be fully covered and fans got wet in 2013 when we last came here. It's been beautifully renovated. We were supposed to come here in 21. The game was moved 10 days before. It would have been behind closed doors anyway. It was moved to Turin. I ended up coming here because I couldn't change my travel plans. Just basically sitting here doing nothing. So United have got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 players on the edge of the Real Sociedad box. And there's going to be another long ball putting in. It's a poor one from Fred. I was with his agent last night, Gilberto Silva. Ball goes in. And another long high ball headed out. So Real Sociedad might hit Manchester United on the break here. The lot's been booked. Another long ball goes in. Another Real Sociedad head gets to it. It's a Manchester United corner. They think it's all over. Of our club officials next to me, head in hands job, feeling the tension. Dalot, ball to Shaw. Everyone is in the La Real area, putting high balls into 6'2" players. There's another one going to go in now. This is not Ten Hag ball, but it won't matter if United get a goal. Not the final whistle. That goalkeeper is going to take all day. This club's got a great history of goalkeepers, by the way. Ramiro's a good one, current one. Listen to it now, listen to how loud it is. The fans are swinging their blue and white scarves around their heads and singing La Real Ale. Another long ball, this time from Luke Shaw. Scott McTominay runs onto it. Once again, Robin Olerman heads it away. Bruno Fernandes, going to be another high ball in. He's overhit it. He's gone out. And that sounds like a goal, but it's actually... ball going out of play. It's going to be it. It's going to be it. There's 15 seconds left and Ramiro's going to take his time. Never felt so disappointed after a win. The Real Sociedad players are hugging each other. They won 1-0 and United won 1-0 here. But because they scored more goals against the Sheriff and Ammonia Nicosia, They're through. As leaders, United are through. Doing it the hard way. Listen to how loud this is now. Oh my gosh. I'm in the mix zone after the game and with Paul Hurst from The Times. What did you make of that tonight between Manchester United and Real Sociedad?
A bit strange night, wasn't it, really? It's a night of mixed emotions. United won. Garnacho scored a first goal, a brilliant goal as well. But obviously United ended up finishing second, and that's two more fixtures in February that they could do without, really, against potentially decent teams as well, you know, Barcelona, Sevilla, Ajax. The results not what they wanted, really. The scoreline is not what they wanted, so I think they'll be disappointed, really.
David Silva's just walked past us. Nice little reminder of how good he... Well, actually, he still is. He's just injured at the moment. What did you make of Garnacho tonight? Because he'll probably make the headlines.
I thought he was brilliant. I just like the fact that he's fearless. You see it with the best young players, don't you? How they just come into the team and just go for it, particularly the wingers. Just be direct, running your fullback. And that's what he... I thought the best thing about Garnacho is that he just he's very direct, fearless, and he could have had two or three goals in the first half, couldn't he? He was that good. And it gives Ten Hag a bit of a conundrum, really, because you've got three or four players who like playing on that left-hand side. You've got Rashford, Sancho, Elanga. So it gives him a bit of a quandary in that position.
I'm surprised how well he's done. I spoke to a couple of people who coached him recently, and they're like, good, but still got loads to learn. Now he took that goal tonight fantastically.
Yeah, I thought he'd the chance had gone when he took that first touch. I mean, it was difficult first touch, to be fair.
Great ball, though.
It was fantastic. Yeah, I thought the whole goal was brilliant. I thought it was really good. It took it very well. You know, the keeper had no chance of stopping that. So, yeah, I thought it was interesting that Ten Hag brought up his attitude last week. Clearly wanted to get a message out there, and you know what Ten Hag's like, doesn't take any nonsense, does he? So he's clearly, Garnacho's clearly got into line with what Ten Hag's thinking, and that's why he's playing.
Good though, when I'm hearing that, I'm thinking good, you know, I trust this manager, he knows what he's doing, and results are bearing it out. I know Manchester United will be second, but what's that, like 9 games now undefeated since the Derby match? It's a good run. And to come here and win is difficult.
Yeah.
I know it's against the backdrop of not being good enough, but they're a good team. They won every game in this group.
I was very impressed with them in the second half, the way they very organised team. And you know, David De Gea was pulled off to amazing saves, didn't he? So they could have quite easily scored a couple. Real Sociedad. So yeah, it's getting that momentum together is key for United, isn't it? After that, the derby seems such a long time ago, and I think if you look at the team now, you wouldn't expect them to put in that kind of performance. You know, the way that they collapsed against City again.
It's only 1 month ago.
Well, there you go. I wouldn't even. You know, it seems
that's how many games has been now.
Yeah, it seems an age ago, doesn't it? So I think they're a lot more solid and a lot more well drilled now.
Talk about a couple of the other players. Marcus Rashford, I know tonight wasn't his night, but it's been much better, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think the goal that he scored against West Ham, I would never have expected him to score that goal. I'm sure it's the first time I've seen him score a goal like that, and it just made me think back to the time when Solskjaer was kept talking about wanting strikers who stick their head in, you know, would be willing to have their nose broken if they were inside the 6-yard box, and he did that. You know, he put his head in and he really went for it, and it was a fantastic header, you know, one of the best goals I've seen at Old Trafford for a while. So yeah, it's all looking positive for Marcus.
We'd better speak to some footballers now, hadn't we?
I'm quite surprised
with Sid Lowe here now. He's just talking about how great he thinks Manchester United are. Sid, you're always an even-minded, fair-handed.
Why are you laughing, Andy?
What do you think of the game tonight? Talk about Real Sociedad if you want.
I was impressed with Real Sociedad. I mean, I think you have to put it in the context that this is a Real Sociedad side who sees United. I mean, we should never forget this, by the way, and I say this quite often in Europe, and sometimes people get angry about it. I don't really understand why. United are massive. I mean, it's genuinely a big deal for a club like this to have United turn up. There's genuinely a sense, I wouldn't quite call it awe, but a sense of, wow, we're going face to face with United. And so I think that does condition the analysis a little bit. And maybe sometimes the enormity of the entity kind of overshadows the team, if you like. But I was impressed with Real Sociedad tonight insofar as I didn't think they just defended. They had more shots than United. Maybe didn't always have the clarity to create really clear chances, but I thought they played. They didn't just kind of try and protect themselves. This is a team, by the way, with 8 players missing, a whole load of young kids in the side, and so I was very impressed with them. From a United point of view, I thought there were moments in the first half where I thought they judged the game pretty well, in the sense that I felt it wasn't necessarily a bad thing to allow Real Sociedad to have the ball, to look for the space between the two fullbacks, sorry, behind the two fullbacks. I think both got a Sabella, he's a real weak link, and we saw that in the first goal. Both the goals that Betis scored against them at the weekend were behind the right back as well. I thought we saw a couple of moments where Diego Rico wasn't quite on the pace. And it felt to me that while Real Sociedad had more of the ball and maybe more chances, that each time the United sort of stepped forward, it looked like it really opened up for them. But then it kind of didn't, if you see what I mean. It looked like it was going to rather than happening. And I thought the second half performance from United actually showed a lack of imagination, I thought, a lack of ideas. And, you know, I know we can define this by talking about Maguire going on up front. I think that would be a bit facile, but there's a sort of degree of symbolism in that, I think.
And they go through now as group leaders, group winners. That's pretty significant for La Real, no?
I think it's very significant for La Real, more so than I think it would have been for Manchester United. But it has a certain significance for United, given that I'm going to use Mourinho's lovely word, if only because it makes me laugh every time I say it. Squalifaliti, the failed sharks from the Champions League. Now, I actually looked at the list and I thought to myself, all right, they are sharks, but actually there's only 3 or 4 of those that United would think I'd really rather not play them.
Most of them in this country.
Yes, Sevilla, Ajax as well, I suppose. Barcelona, it could have been worse because, of course, Atletico could have been in here as well. And much as they're not very good, Atletico, at the moment, you probably don't want to play them. So I don't think it's terrible from United's point of view, but you don't really want 2 extra games. You don't really want to be put in a position where it's a knockout tie more and there's that risk. And, you know, you might get one of the stronger teams. You might be in a position where you don't get through. And so it was better to avoid it from United's point of view. But in particular, it was good to avoid it from Real Sociedad's point of view. Because I think if you look at it just in terms of the size of the clubs, you would say maybe 2 or 3 more of those Squalifaliti are frightening to Real Sociedad than would be to United.
You've seen Casemiro play a lot at Real Madrid. I should say that as well as writing for The Guardian. You do the Spanish football podcast, which is doing
if people
well,
would like
it?
To come and listen to us, that'd be lovely.
You do good, and you can talk about Cadiz and Sevilla, where Manchester United are playing next month in friendly matches.
Are they are, aren't they?
They are.
Tell you what, two
great cities. You're going to come down there.
Tell you what, right? Yeah. Never mind the game.
never mind the World Cup.
Are United doing this deliberately? So they get San Sebastian, Seville, and Cadiz.
They're just choosing the best cities in Europe.
Yeah.
And slowly touring around them.
They're going to be in Monte Carlo before you know it.
So Casemiro's absolutely brilliant. Discuss.
I really like him. I think he's very clever. I think he's technically a better footballer than you think. I think he reads the game really well. All these things, in a way, I feel like I don't need to tell people because, of course, he's been playing at this level for Real Madrid. But I think there was always that slight sense that, yeah, but it's Real Madrid. And, you know, he's the not very good one in the Real Madrid midfield. And actually, in truth, that's something that I think people in Madrid have said a little bit this year because Tchouaméni's started so well. But I don't think that's fair. I think Casemiro is a really bright player. I think he's not the player to make the whole midfield function. I think he's the player to allow the midfield to function, if you see what I mean. So I think the rest of it has to work as well. He's not going to suddenly come in and kind of make this midfield really brilliant. But I think what he will do is he'll come in and he'll allow the good midfielders who are already there or who join the club, maybe if there are signings, to kind of have the freedom to do the things they do. And no, well, look, Cass is there. We can let him sweep up behind us.
Finally, I remember speaking to you after United had played Celta Vigo semi-final in this competition 2017.
Yeah.
And you said to me how powerful, that was the word you used, how powerful Manchester United looked.
They looked just much bigger. I remember them physically looked a bigger team.
In Vigo. Where do you see this Manchester United team at the moment?
Well, look. I start this answer with a kind of a warning. Which is that to say that, first of all, I'm not an expert on United, and I say a lot of them. And I, in particular, don't see a lot of them compared to your listeners.
So you're basically saying, I might now make a twat out myself.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I mean, not for the first time, and almost certainly not for the absolutely not for the last time. My kind of feeling is that this feels like a team that's starting to get a sense of what it wants to do. It feels like a team that maybe has done it not necessarily through, all right, we construct something that's brilliant with the ball, but we give ourselves a degree of solidity, we give ourselves a degree of I don't know, clarity, if you like, in some of the basics. There were a couple of moments earlier on today where I thought, oh, Dalot looks good, and people have been talking about how much he's improved. Admittedly, not a huge amount. I must admit, my feeling today was Manchester United was really... It was really Alejandro, and it was Bruno Fernandes, and that was not a lot else in truth. But I feel like there's an idea forming, and I also feel, and this is seen from the outside, and very definitely from the outside. I mean, not just in terms of not watching them, but absolutely from the outside. I feel like what happened recently with Ronaldo kind of helps the sense of authority and direction from above. The above being the manager, and maybe that's a good thing. Yeah.
How does a free case of beer sound? Well, things are feeling pretty all right about Manchester United at the moment. So you can celebrate with our very good friends at Beer 52. They're offering a free case of 8 delicious craft beers from the Netherlands, the home of Mr. Ten Hag. Simply go to www.beer52.com/United and cover the meagre postage of £5.95. to receive your free case of Dutch beers now. Beer 52 is the biggest beer club in the world. Each month they send their members a case of beer from an exciting location across the globe. Their double Dutch case will take you on a beer trip around the Netherlands' finest independent craft breweries. You can try a double IPA from two chefs at a cool 7.5%, and De Molen's. There's Op & Top, a beautifully easygoing pale ale. And on the dark side this month, there's Daily Grind, a sessionable stout by Mercertown. If dark beer's not your thing, you can choose the light-only case. Also included in your package is the ever-insightful Ferment magazine. There's a couple of tasty snacks as well. And even if, after all that, you're still unsatisfied, you can simply pause or cancel at any time. Go to www.beer52.com/United to claim your free case now. That's beer52, they're the numbers 52.com/United. It's the morning after the game and I'm on a train from San Sebastian to Barcelona. It's about 5.5 hours. It left when it was still dark in San Sebastian, raining. So I didn't really see much of the city, which is a shame because it's a wonderful place. And there's quite a few United fans on this train. And one of them is Alex, who's from Moscow. And he runs a blog. What's it called, Alex?
It's Stratford and Russia.
Stratford and Russia. And how many European aways have you been to?
European ways. Well, that's actually my first one.
But
I've been to United's match in Moscow against CSK Moscow against, I think it was 2015 with Van Gaal, and the one in 2017 when we won 4-1 against CSK under Mourinho. So, yeah, and that's my third one on the United. Yeah.
I was at these trips in Moscow and also Volgograd many years ago, so I saw how your country changed a lot. And when I was in Moscow in 15, I went with the locomotive Ultras. That was quite interesting as well. And then before the Champions League final in 2008, United East End, we played a team of Spartak legends. And they were great. It was such a good experience between the people who played for Spartak Moscow. We gave them a good game too. I should mention Wayne Ducks, who played in that match. He's from Wivenshaw and he passed away recently. Still a young lad, so I thought with Wayne's friends and family. So what's it been like, given the political situation, supporting Manchester United? Because you... I remember being in Moscow in 15. The Russian Reds were really well organised. They had a big Luke Shaw banner made, if I remember rightly.
Yes. Yeah.
And what's changed this year?
Well, the whole community and the whole country just getting separated between like those who don't support the regime and who do support the regime. Among the United fans, we all, even in Moscow, we all. Were very united in terms of we had like Ukrainian fans there, Belarus fans there, and yeah, we get a bit of an argument, but then I think at the end we stick just with the purpose of supporting United and being united, and that's how we try to like epitomize ourselves.
The United Russian Supporters Club is actually one of the biggest ones. Why are Manchester United so popular in Russia?
I don't know. Actually, we have like branches keeping open and open in different cities. But for me, yeah, for me it was like I started supporting in 1997 or 8. Like with the class of 92, obviously, and many people were supporting before, like even before Alex Ferguson, like, and after. I don't know why United, maybe because it's closer to Man United is more or less like Spartak for us, you know, the red colors, and then the great 90s, and then the owners' problems, etc., etc. And Spartak is like a pretty international team, and my brother supports. So I'm not sure about everyone, yeah, but for me, it looks like this.
Can you tell us about Torpedo Moscow? Because I think that was the first Russian team who Manchester United played. That was in the UEFA Cup. I think that's where Gary Neville made his debut.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not one of the giants of Russian football, are they?
Not anymore. They used to be very, very good at that time. I think it was 1992 or 3. I don't know. I was a small child over there. But then, like, the problems came with the financial support. And now their stadium is getting demolished, and like they just, I think they are playing Luzhniki now, like the biggest arena in Russia now, but that's temporary because their stadium is replaced by, I don't know, some modern buildings, and I used to play in that stadium, absolutely nice. But yeah, this is how things are going for Torpedo right now. Not very good, they are not top, but they used to be very, very good.
How has the Russian football been affected by what's going on in Ukraine? Is the domestic league still functioning relatively normally? How do people feel about not being able to see their team in the World Cup, for example?
We're all very, very pissed, I would say. Sorry about the words, but yeah. Because generally, what we have the experience of hockey team playing without the flag, Olympic team playing without the flag, and now all of a sudden football team is not allowed to the World Cup, and we made a very, very good progress in terms of football. We have young people coming into the squad and yeah, performing nice. In terms of the Russian league, well, I would say the most stressful moment is that we have attracted some foreign players, and now they tend to go, and they are allowed to interrupt their contracts and move away, and it's not very good situation. I think that the son of Henrik Larsson did this, however he wasn't like in the starting 11, yeah, I think. But those people like Victor Moses, for example, they are staying in Spartak Moscow and they are playing quite good. Quincy Promise as well, so yeah. This is the thing, I'm worried more about the transfer of, like Chelsea have a huge interest in Arsen Zakharian, the Romanian player, very, very good one, I think is a top prospect, and he wasn't allowed, or it was some issue during the winter transfer market, but I hope he will make it in the summer.
I've just been with Andrei Vyacheslav-Boas, and he managed for Zenit really successfully, and he told me he had a great time there, but even if he speaks about that now, he comes under a lot of criticism. If he talks in a complimentary manner about his time in a city which he loved. How do you get out of Russia at the moment? Complicated, or is it all coming through Istanbul and Dubai?
Well, I think it's Istanbul, Dubai, and Cairo, the capital of Egypt. That's the three ways. Well, I used mine. I recently moved also from Russia. Not because of like the mobilization, etc. I'm just having my work movement. I used Istanbul. It was pretty expensive. So you're going from Moscow to Istanbul, and then you go into the next destination. For me, it was Barcelona. But yeah,
how much was that flight?
It's about, for me, it was 2,500 euros.
So that's five times what it is normally.
Yeah.
Because I went to Moscow in 18, it was £350.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it was, and it was like the direct flights, now you need to switch. So yeah, not a very pleasant experience.
Let's talk about Manchester United. How are you feeling this season about how the team will do?
Well, to be honest, it's been different since the beginning of the season, because first two games against Brentford and Brighton, we were absolutely demolished. And the new signings like Lisandro Martinez and Anthony, he arrived a bit late, but still, Eriksen, we didn't like really feel confident. We were like, Martinez was dragged out of position, and the defense wasn't just that right. I mean, Brentford scoring four, pressing high, and De Gea playing short, and it's all that uncomfortable stuff. Then Ten Hag switched, and I think that was the point, because he switched to the strength of the players he has, like going long, has the runners of Rashford and Sancho and, well, Ronaldo, even though he's not like very good this season, not that good that he was like the last season. But last couple of weeks or months giving me hope and giving us all hope that it all goes well. And now team has the character. That's the most important thing for me. I think they were very fragile under Solskjaer. We had the unitedness, the tradition, etc. But then everything just collapses, and at some point we miss the counter attack. We miss the important goals like against Everton, and we were fragile really. Now it seems better.
The Europa League worth winning?
Well, I think so, but I think we need to see at the Premier League as well, because obviously Chelsea are not doing pretty well this season, just got the new manager, and well, Tottenham either. They started like very, very good, but now seems to be shaky. Arsenal's flying, by the way. Arsenal's flying.
Apart from when they came to Old Trafford.
That's true.
Okay, so our train's about to come into Zaragoza. We'll bring you the next United We Stand podcast from Birmingham at the weekend, where Manchester United will play Aston Villa. Thanks to everyone who's bought the latest United We Stand. We've not got many copies left of that. There's a big interview in there with John Murta, lots of detail about what's going on inside the club. So if you've not seen that yet, you can buy it in newsagents around Manchester, or you can download it, go to uwsonline.com, and you'll see links there where you can download it. And thanks for all your support, because we put hundreds of hours into that each month, so it's really good that for years and years, and it's 33 years actually this week that United We Stand has been going, so we really appreciate that. Until the next podcast, goodbye.